Along with the turkey, the stuffing, and the cranberry sauce, we serve up now what has become another traditional holiday offering, a story from our own Bailey White. This half hour, Miss Wigglesworth's Bull.
This is a story about a middle-aged woman named Miss Wigglesworth and the Jersey Bull she won in a raffle. The story takes place about 90 years ago when roads were not paved and country children could not get to the schools in town. Miss Wigglesworth lived with one of these country families and worked as a teacher for their children. Miss Wigglesworth was a homely woman. Her skin and her eyes and her hair were all the same color, a dim, pasty tan, with a vague nose in the middle of it all and such big front teeth that her upper lip had to work to keep them covered. She dressed in pale, flimsy clothes, and she was always plucking at fringed shawls and scarves and gathered sleeves, trying to get them to drape in graceful folds. But the folds always seemed to come untucked or unpinned, and frazzled tails of fabric would trail after her, snagging on things. Miss Wigglesworth took her job of civilizing these country children very seriously. She would not allow the boys to sing about the waxful maid, whose sweetheart took her by her golden hair and drug her on the ground, then threw her into the river that flows through Waxful Town. Instead, she sat them down in straight-backed chairs and made them memorize long poems about well-dressed little boys who would hear angels singing in the night and sweetly die before dawn. She thought she could tame the girls by having them play with dolls, but they were rough little girls who had never owned a doll. So the resourceful Miss Wigglesworth would go out at dusk and catch a few fat toad frogs and sit up all night sewing little outfits for them with silk thread. In the schoolroom the next morning, she and the girls would dress the toad frogs up, tugging their little nubbly, crooked arms through the ruffled sleeves and tying tiny silken bows under their gray, dank throats. By the time the toad frogs were fully dressed in all their finery, they would be half dead from the handling and would sit quite docilely in their little twig chairs. Miss Wigglesworth would arrange this grisly tableau in the middle of the schoolroom table, the mother, the father, and the boy and girl toad frog, their grave, dark eyes looking solemnly out from under their bonnets and hats, their struggles calmed by now to pitiful gestures of almost graceful desperation. "There now," Miss Wigglesworth would say, snipping a final thread and clapping her hands with delight. "Such a happy little family." On some summer afternoons when the children longed to be killing rats against time down at the barn or baiting hogs back in the river swamp, Miss Wigglesworth would make them accompany her on a slow stroll through the garden, where suddenly they would come upon a complete tea service hidden behind a clump of aspidistra. Cups and saucers, lace napkins, little silver spoons, and iced cakes with ants crawling on them. "Oh, look," Miss Wigglesworth would exclaim, striking a carefully rehearsed pose denoting surprise and delight, her eyes stretched wide, one hand pressed to her bosom. "The dear little fairies have set out this tea party just for us." But the children knew this was a lie. They had seen Miss Wigglesworth with their own eyes earnestly staggering out to the end of the garden over and over with the tea tray, the fringes of her shawl snagging on branches, her upper lip straining gently to cover her teeth in her excitement. They did not want to sit on these uncomfortable garden seats on a sweltering summer afternoon, swallowing scalding hot tea out of rose-painted cups and listening to Miss Wigglesworth remind them, "Pinky, pinky." That night, the fairy tea party would be matched with a little act of cruelly imaginative revenge. And the next morning, Miss Wigglesworth would be sitting in the hall on her strapped-up trunk, dressed in her traveling cloak, her hat on her head. "I cannot allow myself to be," she would say in a quavering voice. And then the mother of the children would say sweetly, "Oh, Miss Wigglesworth, and dear Miss Wigglesworth." And the father, stern and tall and somber, would say, "Miss Wigglesworth, will you step into my office, please?" And there in that dark and serious room, the little red-eyed child would stand in front of the gun cabinet facing Miss Wigglesworth, and with her fists clenched behind her back, she would recite, "Miss Wigglesworth, I am sorry I put that very small alligator in your bathtub, and I will not do it again, ma'am." Later that day, the mother would find a time to be alone with Miss Wigglesworth, and tweaking a drooping shawl back into position on Miss Wigglesworth's bony shoulder, she would say, "Miss Wigglesworth, you know we love you and appreciate you very much, but sometimes I wonder, for someone in your position, if you fully realize how fortunate, living as you do in the bosom of our family, why, I know girls who would. Now, we're very happy to have you here, of course, and, oh, Miss Wigglesworth, dear Miss Wigglesworth, don't start that." And the next day, things would go on just as before, because the fact was, Miss Wigglesworth, for all her strapped-up trunk and her traveling cloak and her statements about not allowing herself to be, had nowhere to go. One morning at the breakfast table, laying her knife and fork down for emphasis and waiting for everyone's complete attention, the mother announced, "Children," and she gave them a squelching glare, "we were very pleased to learn last night that Miss Wigglesworth has won a bull." It was not something that one expected to hear about Miss Wigglesworth, and there was a moment of silence while Miss Wigglesworth dabbed at her teeth daintily with a napkin and blushed with pride. "Miss Hamilton herself presented me with the gift," she said. Miss Hamilton was an eccentric Yankee spinster of the prominent Pennsylvania Hamiltons, who, in the poor days after the war between the states, had swept down south from Philadelphia and bought the old Bagot place. She had made the house elegant with chandeliers and Persian rugs, and then, blessed with money to indulge her whims, she had turned the tired old cotton plantation into an elegant little dairy, with whitewashed fences enclosing flowery meadows, green and white milking parlors with Ionic columns, and cows imported from the Isle of Jersey. As a kind of goodwill gesture to her poor neighbors, when the cement was dry on the serpentine brick walls and the marble drinking troughs were filled with water and the high-bred Jersey cows were settled down from their Atlantic crossing, Miss Hamilton held a kind of jamboree. Long tables with linen tablecloths were set up in the meadows lined with silver pitchers of iced creamy drinks and blue willow platters piled high with buttered sandwiches and cakes and cookies in the shape of cows. At the height of the festivities, Miss Hamilton herself appeared on an upstairs balcony, dressed in a kind of Marie Antoinette milkmaid costume, with a silk satin dirndl skirt and ruffled pantaloons, and selected the winning raffle ticket from a gleaming brass milk pail. "And our Miss Wigglesworth," said the mother, smiling down the table, "was the happy winner of a week-old Jersey bull calf." No one told Miss Wigglesworth that a bull calf in a dairy herd is a useless item, something to be gotten rid of like chicken litter from an egg farm. And he was an adorable little thing, as all week-old calves must be, a delicate fawn color with smudges of black around his shiny eyes and a black shiny nose always poking for something to suck. Miss Wigglesworth was devoted to him. She fed him 4 times a day from a bucket with a rubber nipple at the bottom. She wove daisy chains to hang around his neck and marigold crowns for his head. There was no time for fairy tea parties, and it got to be December without Ode to Autumn being memorized as Miss Wigglesworth staggered back and forth from the spring house to the barn with her milk bucket. The time to castrate the little bull came and went, but no one thought of it. And before long, in spite of his size, he began to behave like a bull, rearing back and lowering his head between his scrawny shoulders, swatting his tail from side to side and pawing up dirt with a tiny hoof. Of course, Miss Wigglesworth named him Toro. And when she wasn't looking, the children would climb into the paddock and flick a red rag in his face and shout, "Toro, Toro." Then, when the little bull got so big that they could no longer snatch him up by the front legs and prance him around, or grab him by his little nubs of horns and fling him over on his side, they left off the red rag and took to tormenting the young bull from the loft overhead, where they would lie in the hay calling, "Toro, Toro." The bull would snort and stomp and ramp from one end of the fence to the other looking for them, and they would throw sticks down on him. After a year, he had grown to his full height, and by the time he was 2 years old, he had filled out with a hump on his massive shoulders and a towering crest. The delicate shadings on his face darkened and spread so that the powerful front parts of him were a gleaming black. He grew out of his capers and twirls and feints, and now he mostly just stood in the middle of his little paddock, glowering out through the fence and munching the armfuls of tender grass Miss Wigglesworth brought him from the edge of the pond. The children stopped throwing sticks at him, and instead, grown men would come and lean on the fence and gaze in at him and say, "Mm-mm." Miss Wigglesworth's bull would leave off his chewing. He would make a slow turn. His crest would seem to swell, and he would lower his head and glare at the men out of all that darkness. The dust would settle and everything would grow still. It seemed like even the birds would stop singing until there was nothing left but the sunshine and the bull stare. And finally the men would turn away from the fence and say, "Whoa." At the end of 3 years, the bull was moved to a woods pasture at the back of the place. Miss Wigglesworth trudged back there faithfully every evening to leave a bucket of corn and oats at the gate. But the bull stayed for the most part at the far end of the pasture, a dark shape among trees. Occasionally, people would see him in the distance and point him out. "Oh, look," they would say, as if they'd almost forgotten, "Miss Wigglesworth's bull."
Bailey White continues the story about Miss Wigglesworth and her bull just ahead.